Please join me in prayer. O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master,
Dearest Mother,
Saints and Sages of all religions,
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only King.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Biblical stories describing people, events, and places were spoken and then written as a teaching tool. The stories can be seen to have multiple levels of meaning that help guide the spiritual aspirant socially, physically, mentally, and most of all spiritually. Last week I was speaking on the topic of Christmas when a revelation came to me about the inner meaning of Jesus, Mother, and Father. Joseph and Mary represent the redemption of reason and feeling. Adam and Eve were the prototypes for reason and feeling, going against their divine intuition by eating the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, or duality. As a result, Adam and Eve, or reason and feeling, took themselves out of the garden where they walked with God, or were in union with the divine consciousness. A long journey resulted for the soul, wandering in ignorance, making slow progress back to the divine origin. Joseph and Mary represent the return to that fateful decision, only this time it will be done differently. Mary symbolizes devotion and surrender to God. Her purity is undeniable, and her desire to be attuned to the infinite is prominent. She is put to the test from a worldly standpoint. She is pregnant without being married. Although this is an enormous problem for her, she has faith in her revelation that this is a spiritual experience and displays great courage. She surrenders to God's will. Joseph is also tested, as reason wrestles with this absolutely phenomenal event. His reason cannot find its way through the dilemma until he has a revelation in a dream that this is truly a spiritual experience. He too surrenders. Both Joseph and Mary are then taken on a dramatic journey that changes the world, uplifting it into higher realms. Each of us have Joseph and Mary attributes. Our reason and feeling natures are being purified so that we too may come to the point of surrender where the Christ child may be born within. In addition to the reason-feeling aspects, Mother Hamilton revealed that Joseph and Mary relate to the activity in the physical body as well. Joseph and Mary represent the pituitary gland and the pineal gland, respectively. These secrete a vital life force-filled substance that comes together to make the Christ seed. It is a virginal birth because these two glands never come into physical contact. Just as the merging of the male sperm and the female ovum produces an astrolite that attracts a human soul for incarnation, so too, to an even greater degree, do these secretions of pineal and pituitary glands attract the pure Christ consciousness that makes manifest the Christ child. The five-pointed star glows in the ajna, the point between the eyebrows, as seen in deep meditation, signaling that the Christ light is becoming incarnate on earth, earth representing the body. The redemption of the world comes about through this divine incarnation. The world, or human consciousness, is redeemed, or lifted into divine consciousness. When the Christ, that divine consciousness made manifest in creation, is born, or awakened, in the night of delusion, to the herald of angels, angels being divine understanding, and the pronouncement that there is peace on earth, goodwill toward all men, that is felt in every part of the being. As we move forward in time, we come to know that Joseph dies at a point when Jesus is coming to age. Symbolically, reason, or Joseph, must make way for the divine intuition that Christ makes manifest. This is necessary because reason cannot usher the individual into divine consciousness. It can only help prepare the way. When Christ matures or becomes strong in the individual, then reliance is put upon meditation-gained intuition and not on reason. Time and again, intuition of Christ consciousness proves itself superior to reason. Reason depends on what the senses say and what other minds have to say. It is limited. Divine intuition stems directly from cosmic consciousness and is therefore unlimited. By virtue of the fact it comes from the purity of divine consciousness, it is perfectly attuned to divine virtues, further making it superior to reason that is made up of mixed motives and driven by the human ego. Mary continues in the story of the life of Christ because as feeling, as distinct from emotion or sense of touch, is so closely connected to the divine intuition. Referring back to Genesis and the fall of man, feeling nature, or Eve, is attracted to the tree of knowledge of good and evil, or duality. When feeling is directed towards attractions of the senses, then reason, or Adam, falls to rationalization and follows feeling. Feeling and reason become bound to the sense nature of touch, and the likes and dislikes of the body determine the decisions. Adam follows Eve. This dominance of sense life creates a roller coaster of emotions, also a product of feeling nature. Feeling nature then is directly responsible for the attraction to the world of duality and the fall of human consciousness. The purification of feeling nature, or Mary, must then be instrumental in ushering in the new Christ consciousness and seeing it through to complete fulfillment. However, feeling nature is not equal to Christ consciousness. This is illustrated when Jesus points out that Mary may not be permitted entrance when he is communing with his disciples, or the chakras, saying, "Who is my mother and who are my brothers?" And he stretched out his hand towards his disciples and said, "Here are my mother and my brothers." When the true message of the Bible is properly understood, a wondrous proclamation is broadcast to the entire world for those who have eyes to see and ears to hear. The message is this: you may attain sonship, or oneness with God, through following the path laid out by Jesus, the Christed One, the One anointed by God to redeem you, the great light within. The birth of Christ happens within you. The gathering of disciples, the healings, the facing of opposing forces, the crucifixion and the resurrection, it all happens right within you. It is the inheritance right of all humanity, and the time for awakening of the sleeping Christ consciousness is now. Christmas is the time of that birth, to see the star, to hear the angels and be in awe, and to discover who and what you really are. May you be blessed in your life to find the fulfillment of this birth. We're the privileged recipients of tremendous awareness of the inner truths of these scriptures. Going back over 100 years, Larhi Mahasya, through his meditation gained wisdom, realized and saw that so many of the Hindu scriptures, the Vedas, the Bhagavad Gita, and others, have embedded within them so many truths about the inner journey that we all go through. This is universal. It is scientific in the sense that it is not predicated upon one religion or one spiritual teacher or one way to go in terms of everybody following an identical path. You can say there are as many paths as there are individuals. And yet there are hallmarks of realization that can be marked out, both as a guideposts along the way that make us know that we are proceeding correctly. It acts as confirmation once we have those experiences. And then they become a way of relating these great truths to others so that it may help quicken their understanding. This is the reason for parable. Parable is really a fascinating thing because on the surface, a parable can be taken as a simple story with a simple moral. And Jesus used this to great effect, as had also been used for many thousands of years in the East through the Vedas and other great stories that tell the story of human development, that give cautionary tales about those who wander off the pure path and attain something different. So Jesus and his life in its entirety is actually a parable. We're given this hint when in the Bible it says he taught with parable and without parable he did not teach. The entire life, the birth, the crucifixion, the death, all the teachings, the meeting of the opposing forces, they're all stories that happen right within each one of us. When we have attained a certain level of intensity, of desire for God, then we are granted entry into the same life. Now, Christ was born at a time as was foretold. And it is foretold that the Christ will be born within you. Now, this Christ is that perfect, beautiful, blissful consciousness that is ever a part of you. But for most of us and most of humanity, that Christ light is hidden. Now, in India, they call it the Krishna light. In Taoism, it is the way. But it is, by whatever word you call it, as Shakespeare said, the rose is still a rose. The Christ is still a Christ. The Buddha nature is still the Buddha nature. And so on and so forth. This is a wonderful way to know about all the various religions, and therefore every religion, to some extent, becomes our friend. Has some, perhaps some source of inspiration for us. Or we may feel a special affinity towards one religion. We grew up, by and large, all of us, with a Christian point of view. And the Christmas tree, as seen here, is a very familiar thing. But the Christmas tree also has a deep symbolic value because we know from Sri Yukteswar, who took Lari Mahasya's teachings about the inner meaning of the Vedas. And he saw replicated there the inner meaning in the Christian scriptures that he became familiar with. And he knew that the tree of life exists right within us. It is in the spine and in the brain. And that when that tree of life becomes inwardly illumined in meditation consciousness, we see there many lights that get reflected in the ajna. Or, through our third eye, we may look down through our spine and see various colors. I remember once in the early visions that I had a beautiful image of a deep blood red center surrounded in a gold light. And it was truly beautiful, and I had a little familiarity with some of the chakras and their different colors, but I didn't see anything represented. Then I had a roommate one time, and he had a Tibetan picture that showed this second chakra with this deep blood red surrounded by a golden ray, and it perfectly resembled what I had seen in deep meditation. So it acted as a confirmation that what I saw was true. And so this Christmas tree, with all of the lights and all of the different symbols, becomes representative of the human spine and the brain. And the gifts down below are those gifts that are spiritual in nature when we begin to really delve into this. A very important kind of time happens when we first perhaps take up meditation. And it is a struggle, as it is for everybody who is learning how to meditate. And the mind wanders and it goes back and forth. But finally, perhaps a momentary time at all, or it lasts for a longer period of time. But as Master describes here, taking longer time in meditation, it's as if you sink down to a new level in a positive kind of way. You go deeper. You feel a tremendous sense of peace. This Christ peace comes into you. Or you feel the bliss expanding out through you. And through this experience, your mind becomes inwardly attuned. Now, this is a tremendous time because before that, it's a struggle staying on the surface of consciousness, dealing with the things of distractions that come your way in the world, and really letting your mind go into that deeper sense of peace. Sometimes people say, I can't meditate. I'm no good at it. And what they mean, of course, is that their mind tends to stay active and they don't drop into those lower stages. Even Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita says that the mind is like wild horses pulling you in every direction. But that if you persist and if you keep at it, eventually you will sense that you will drop down into these deeper levels. Now, this is the beginning of your inner journey. And as you allow your mind to settle down and begin to attune itself to this inner consciousness, you feel a positive attraction for that. This is bhakti. This is love for God. You feel that desire to dive deeper into your consciousness. You feel the positive attributes begin to come up through, bubbling through your consciousness. So much of what we have had from religion has been surface deep in a sense because what we get in the beginning is all the distractions, all the things that we've done wrong, all the things perhaps we have felt sorry for, and we feel we need forgiveness or self-forgiveness for. And this occupies us a great deal. As I have mentioned before, Western psychology in so many ways has duplicated this because Freud looked into the consciousness and he saw the id. And the id is these objectionable kinds of things that we don't like and therefore we have to build a barrier for. He saw religion as a reflection of this inner battle with these objectionable things that we didn't like, and that God the Father was really our earthly father that we were having this struggle with, this edible complex that was going on. But he didn't look deep enough. He didn't go far enough. He's the only psychoanalyst who himself was never psychoanalyzed. And maybe he could have used a little because he would have gone deeper that way. He would have seen, if he had delved through all of the varying complexes and the conflicts that go on within consciousness, that when you pierce through that veil of illusion, then you discover a brand new world inside of you. It is a world that is illumined. It is a world that is full of consciousness. It is a world that is full of divine intelligence. In fact, as you delve deeper into that world, you see that this world is actually an expression of that divine consciousness. I like to tell people that whatever your greatest passion is in life, whatever sport, whatever activity, whatever craft, whatever thing that inspires you that you just love the most, that is originally coming from divine consciousness. And it's just one little aspect of divine consciousness. And if you can imagine multiplying your joy, your enthusiasm, your passion for whatever it is, whether it is a thing of the senses or whether it is a thing of refinement, it doesn't make any difference. Multiply it by many, many, many times. And you will begin to see that going to the origin of life is far superior than waiting for crumbs to drop from the table, hoping you'll get a little bit of enjoyment here and there from this worldly life. This spiritual life is not retiring from life. It's going to the source of life. It's like grabbing on to something that has 500,000 volts attached to it. Now, to some, this can be intimidating because you're not sure what you're going to get. Can I handle it? What will I be? Will I be singed into a million pieces, never to be picked up again? And this is a real fear that comes to us and makes us hold back. That fear can be conscious or unconscious. And so we don't dive deeper because really we don't have faith, we don't have trust. Some think that they will become a non-being, a non-entity. But look at the lives of great masters. Look at Jesus, at Buddha. Look at Master, look at Mother. Were these non-personalities? Did these people not express anything about themselves? They were strong personalities. You become yourself, and you become yourself as you have never been before. You feel like you have truly arrived at home. And so as we dive deeper and we begin to see this Christmas tree, this Christ tree, beginning to get illumined inside, we get drawn deeper and deeper into it. Now, we look to this ajna, to this third eye point, the point between the eyebrows, and we see that beautiful five-pointed star. And it is glorious when you see it, but there is a difference between seeing it and piercing that star and transcending, going into its very nature. But at first you see it, and this is the wise men. And the wise men represent the three gunas, from, as is talked about in yoga. The gunas are that which is sattvic, that which is sweetness, rajasic, that which is active, and tamasic, that which is downward-oriented, depressive in nature. And so the gold represents the gold that we chase after in this world. It is the fool's gold, the gold that we run after. We're always chasing for the prize. If I only had so much money, if I only had so much success, if I only had so much recognition in this world, we reason, then I would be happy. Then people would love me. But we look at the rich and famous, and is it true that everybody loves them, that they find universal happiness? And we find that that's not true, and yet we chase after it and chase after it, as if it is all and all and all. And so this is the gold. The frankincense is the, the myrrh is the bitterness in life. That is the tamasic aspect. And that is when we feel discouraged, when we feel hopeless, when we feel down about ourselves and about life. That is that agency that produces that kind of feeling and aspect. And the frankincense, that is the incense, that is the sweetness, that is the purity that floats up from our soul. It's the good aspirations. And these three gunas are all striving for some kind of dominance. But the three wise men are wise because of this. They surrender those attributes at the feet of the Christ. They give themselves totally and completely because they realize that in this Christ birth, in this Christ life, there is something vastly superior to any one of these gunas, even the frankincense or the sweetness of life, because that is always predicated upon our circumstances, and it is limited in nature. But the Christ bliss, the Christ peace, the Christ love is unlimited in nature because it is one with God. And so these three attributes are given at the feet of God underneath the star. You see how these symbols come alive. They're not the story that are just merely repeated for 2,000 years about an individual who lived long ago. They are your story when you choose to go inward. And this was deeply understood at the time that these stories came about. Some of them may have historical meaning and others may not. There's a historian, Josephus, who wrote much about Herod and the times of his ruling kingdom. And he did not note in his history, and it was a bloody history that he noted, that there was any killing of all the children. And yet this is written about in the scriptures. It could be that was something he missed. But it has deep symbolic value, so it doesn't really make a difference in that sense, whether it has historicity or to it or not. It's only written about in one of the Gospels. But this great killing of all the children is done by Herod because Herod represents the passions. And as you go into this interior life, it is an experience that comes to everyone that the sexual passions rises up. And you want to express them. Perhaps you feel like you've met your soulmate. You meet somebody and you feel an intense sexual attraction to them. And it doesn't make any difference whether you're married or not. This can come up towards another person. And it lends a halo, it lends a glow to them. Sri Yukteswar talked about when he was a child and he desired a puppy dog, one of the neighbor's puppy dogs, and he just threw a complete tantrum and wouldn't quit until they got the neighbor's puppy dog. And he said it was the ugliest little homely mutt you ever met. But his desire for it, his attraction for it, lended it a great halo. And suddenly it just looked like the most fabulous dog you could imagine, and irreplaceable. Nothing else would do. They tried to offer him other dogs, and no, nothing would do at all. Because he had this glow of attraction around this little puppy dog. And so this is the way that attachment binds us. And it lends a glow of attraction to something that we feel we can't live without it. Well, Herod represents that kind of passion. And so he wants that. And he's so jealous, he learns that a new ruler may rise up within the lands. And so he seeks that out. He doesn't want to surrender himself. You see, he's counter to the three wise men. Three wise men surrender themselves. But Herod doesn't. And so a fierce battle occurs within the being. You have these passions rise up, and still you're striving for the divine consciousness. Now, as Mother described, these pineal and pituitary glands secrete and the secretions come together and, as she described, come down the ganglionic nervous system and get deposited just behind the stomach. Now, Bethlehem means house of bread, and it is the place of the stomach, and there is a small cave-like area there where this seed then begins to manifest. And that is when you see the star. When the passions rise up, Herod seeks to expel all the children through sexual force. But the Christ goes to Egypt, or at the base of the spine. And there he begins to make his upward journey. That Christ seed comes up, and he begins to gather his disciples to him. The disciples are the chakras. Now there are six chakras below the seventh, which has no duality. It goes beyond duality. And so each one has this dual force to it. And that is the 12 disciples. 6 times 2 equals 12. And that's the 12 disciples, each one representing an aspect of this divine consciousness that is in formation, going up the spine. And he gathers them unto himself. But he also meets these oppositional forces. At some point, he comes out of Egypt and he begins to make that ascension and goes up the circuit and is baptized in the River Jordan. Now, the River Jordan is the spine or the spinal fluid. It is the Shushumna in yoga. It is the center of the spine. And that Shushumna is in the astral spine, and it goes from the base of the spine all the way up to the medulla at the base of the skull. And this fantastic journey all happens right in you. Isn't this incredible? These are the great truths that are embodied in these stories. And yet, we just simply stay on the surface. We perhaps just focus in on the festivities, the gifts giving within the family or within others. And yet, these great truths lie unused, hidden. And it is a great shame because there are such greater gifts that we may receive and that we may give. They are always there. They are waiting for us. closing, I've just been feeling so close to both Mother and Master. And this was written by Master, went by Swami Yogananda at the time. It's entitled, Who But You Could Deck the Flower with Pearly Dew? And is dedicated to all aspirants. Thy baby bud flower, on the breast of Mother Earth, nursed by wind and shower, opens its lily lips in mirth, sips thy milk of sunny rays, while the cradle of the breeze sways. Then it opens its ruby lips, spread with the honey of light and dew, and softly sobs and cries for you. Then you sing your soft lullaby, with the rustle of the leaves aloft. Who but you could deck the flower with color and pearly dew? Then your dame nursemaid nature grows the baby bud stature into a full-grown lady flower, with costume of painted petals. Then she leans to dance in the halls of bowers, and in joy drops her silken tassels, the wealth of fragrance to all and you. Such beauty and perfumed heart, who but you could start in the love in the flower with lips of pearly dew? So even though we may find ourselves to be busy, even though this may be a festive time, let us each seek out a secret corner of our life and find time to dive deeper. We're coming up on the winter solstice, and there's a reason why Christmas comes at this time of year. In reality, based on the physical evidence, Jesus, if he was born when the shepherds were out in the fields, happened in the springtime, not the wintertime. But this winter solstice is a powerful time. It is a time of transformation. Each transition within the solstice and equinoxes are times of transition. And if we attune ourselves to it, if we put our sails out, we can catch those spiritual winds that are blowing especially strong. Now, some people, many people, and I was one, who for many years, the build-up to Christmas or the solstice was a very difficult time. And then as the solstice arrived, it seemed to all break loose. And that happened year after year to where it was an unmistakable kind of occurrence. If we can open our spiritual sails, catch that spiritual wind, we can use that tremendous dynamic energy that is flowing through this world right now in order to lift us higher and higher into divine consciousness. So do not miss this opportunity. Do not become distracted with the things of the world. Do not let the stirring up that this energy can do in your consciousness, that can stir up the things deep in the subconscious that are difficult. Do not let that sway you from finding that divine breeze and allowing you access to higher and higher divine consciousness. Learn to interiorize your mind. Learn to focus yourself in such a way that you get a positive attraction for the divine energies and consciousness that resides within and without. We have our own little Christ baby upstairs, as you might hear. Now I'd like to close with that most beautiful and sacred song, a verse of Holy Night, Silent Night. Silent Night, Holy Night, all is calm, all is bright. Virgin, mother and child. Sleep in heavenly peace. Sleep in heavenly peace.
Feel that heavenly peace. Let that Christ light within your heart radiate out to fill this room. And let it continue expanding out until you see it surrounding and permeating this world, manifesting a beautiful and deep peace that all the world's inhabitants may have an attraction for that peace. Be willing to set aside war and implements of war and to surrender to that peace. This is the great promise. It is in a golden age. You can all be forerunners in this new coming of age, a time when wars will be looked on in history books with an unfathomable non-understanding. How could such a thing occur? And yet we live in such a world. See that beautiful golden light permeating through all minds, all hearts, all consciousness. Where your most attention is, how may you serve? How may you serve God? How may you serve God within one another? And your heart is soft and open and exudes a divine fragrance. You pray with me, O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother,
I feel the wonder and the beauty
of Thy glorious presence
in every part of my being.
My heart is bursting with my love for Thee.
I kneel in adoration at Thy feet
and surrender myself to Thee.
I feel the power of Thy perfection
surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence
are radiant with Thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss
of my communion with Thee.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
I bow to the light within you.